They'll follow the trail of Ayu's silk and figure out where I went in a moment. Even if I can get out of this school somehow, where would I go after that? I can't go back to Mother. I'm sure Swordtail will be on Misbehavior's way by morning, if he's still alive. And I have no idea what they've done with Luna. He pressed his talons to his mouth. He didn't have time to cry. He didn't have time to be sucked into imagining how Luna and Swordtail and Burnett and Io must be feeling right now. He started across the courtyard toward one of the school doors, although at this time of day he was afraid they'd all be locked.
Psst! Over here!
Blue whirled around. A small equipment shed was built along the side of one of the school walls. The door was open a crack, and a pair of golden-yellow talons was reaching out of it, beckoning to him. He could hear the hive-wing voices issuing commands on the other side of the wall. There wasn't time to be worried and indecisive. He bolted toward the shed and let the strange talons yank him inside. The door snicked shut behind him, leaving them in pitch darkness. Blue tripped over a ball under his claws, and the other dragon caught him, strong arms holding him up. He felt the brush of wings against his side. This was a silkwing who had already gone through metamorphosis then, but it must have been recently. This dragon was smaller than he was.
"Who?"
he whispered.
"Shh,"
she said. She wrapped her front claws softly around his snout. The shed was small and packed with paraphernalia. There was barely room for Blue and the other dragon to stand. His claws fell clumsily entangled with hers. His neck kept bumping against cool scales, and her tail lightly rested over his. But she was so perfectly still that he couldn't pull away. Or at least, he feared that if he did, he might knock over a wall of armor or something. He wondered if she could feel his heart slamming around his chest. Did she work at the school? Cleaning hive-wing classrooms or preparing their snacks? Had she ever seen the hive-wings act like this before? As though their minds had all melded into one? Did she know what was happening? And how dangerous it was to protect him?
"Don't move," she whispered,
apple-scented breath in his ear. She let go of his face, and in the dark, he felt her crouch beside him, reaching for the inner wall. Her wings were like a cloud of butterflies against his scales, touching down and taking off in a thousand little brushes. Maybe she was scared too. Or had she rescued other silk wings like this before? He tried to imagine being that brave. Brave enough to see a dragon in trouble, and an entire tribe turned terrifying and still reach out to help. Maybe if he imagined it hard enough, he could make himself a little braver too. She took one of his front talons and touched it to the wall, or rather, to a spot where the wall disappeared. An opening, a trap door into a tunnel.
"Stay close to me," she whispered. "The tunnels can be confusing."
"Are you with the chrysalis?"
he whispered back, his nose bumping hers as he turned toward her. She touched his mouth again, a hush gesture, before ducking into the tunnel. He followed as close as he dared, trying not to step on her tail. It was like crawling through an ant farm, following the tunnels in a winding maze through the walls of the school. Here and there, chinks of light shone through the cracks, and Blue caught glimpses of the buttercup-yellow scales of the dragon in the dark. Through the cracks, he could also see fragments of the school, even rows of tables, a blackboard covered with neat columns of numbers, an easel divided into narrow lines of blue and black paint. At last she stopped and peeked through a small hole just at eye level. After a moment, she unlatched a trap door, pushed it open, and climbed out, beckoning for him to follow. He had to duck his head as he came through, since the trap door opened out of the wall under a long table. Blue's eyes were dazzled for a moment as he crawled out, although the room they were in was not particularly bright. It had no outer windows, and was lit only by a few small lamps. The first thing he saw, as his eyes adjusted, were the books. Shelves and shelves of books, reaching floor to ceiling all around the room. He stretched his aching legs and turned in a slow, wandering circle, thinking of the students who were lucky enough to attend a school with so many books. Had anyone read all of them? Did the librarian love handing them out, or did she wish she could keep all of them safely within the circle of her wings? "This is our library," said his rescuer, hopping up onto the table and curling her tail around her back claws. "I know, it's pretty small, but it's closed most of the time. We share our librarian with a bigger school up level, so it's a good place to hide when the rest of the tribe goes all creepy eyes." Blue turned slowly toward her, his heart thumping like mad. Her claws were small and sharp, like a leopard's, and her four wings swooped down from her back in beautiful smooth folds. She had an open, curious face, gold-rimmed spectacles, and warm, dark brown eyes that made him think of owls and tree hollows. In the glow of the lamplight, her scales were gold and tangerine, but speckled here and there with black scales that looked like tiny ink blots. Black scales. The unmistakable sign of a dragon descended from clear sight. Silkwings never had black scales. His rescuer was a hive wing. Chapter 7. Blue inhaled sharply.
I thought, he stammered.
"Wow, you're beautiful," she said wonderingly. "I've never seen a silkwing in those shades of blue and purple before. Is that what your parents look like, too?"
He said, looking down at his azure talons. "Not exactly. Or, I mean, I'm not sure. I've never met my father. Shouldn't you?"
"Really?" she said. She tipped her head at him, catching sparkles from the lamps in her glasses. "Why don't you know your father? Is that normal for silkwings? Don't you live with your parents? Or, I'm sorry, is that a question I'm not supposed to ask? I ask a lot of questions I'm not supposed to ask. Apparently, according to most of my teachers. Also my parents. Actually, according to pretty much every grown-up hivewing. Too many questions, Cricket. Don't you know what happens to nosy little hivewings? They lose those noses." "Which is silly. I've never seen a dragonette without a nose. And I'm sure I can't be the first one with this many questions. What's your name?" "Oh, that's another question. Sorry. I'm Cricket."
"Blue," he said. "I'm Blue."
"You sure are," she said, and giggled. "Oh dear, I'm sorry. I bet you've heard that one before." He took a step closer to her, trying to rearrange his understanding of what kind of dragon she was. A hivewing who helped silkwings? That wasn't a thing.
Shouldn't you
be all mind-controlled, too? She finished for him, and hesitated. "Yes, I should be. Every other hivewing is. I have no idea why I'm not." She flicked her wings and settled them again with a little laugh. "I can't believe I've kept that secret for 6 years, and the first dragon I'm telling is a strange silkwing. Katydid is going to be so mad."
"Is that what happened to everyone? Mind control?"
"You didn't know about that?" she said. "I mean, I suppose I didn't either, until I saw it happen the first time. She doesn't do it very often, but Queen Wasp can control every hive wing in the tribe. One at a time, or just one hive, or everyone at once if she wants to."
"Whoa," Blue said, reeling a little.
"I know," she said.
"Except you," he said.
"Except me. Isn't that fascinating?" Her face lit up, like all three moons rising at once. "I can't figure it out. There's nothing in any of these books about how she does it. Is it genetic? Am I some kind of mutation? Or could it be something we eat? but I eat everything. And like, a lot of everything. I'm always hungry.
It's so mysterious.
There's seriously nothing about me that's different from all the other Hivewings. Blue thought there was. He'd never met another Hivewing like her. First of all, willing to talk to a Silkwing as though they could be friends. Second of all, looking at him as if he was a real dragon, not a wingless curiosity or nuisance to be stepped over.
That must be such a weird feeling, he said. Having someone take over your body like that? Making you say things and do things you wouldn't say or do yourself? Do you think they remember it afterward? Are they in there, feeling trapped, while it's happening?
They do remember it, she said. They remember pretty much everything. My sister, Katie, did. Says it's not a trapped feeling, though. It's more like suddenly you really want to do exactly what everyone else is doing. There's no struggle. She says it's kind of peaceful, having someone else make all the decisions for you for a bit.
Maybe.
Blue thought of the tiny dragonettes attacking him and shivered.
Except, then later you'd feel like everything you did was still your choice. And you'd probably feel guilty about it, even though it wasn't really you at all.
She looked surprised, and then her gaze drifted up the shelves of books as she thought about what he'd said. That's true, she said, after a moment. I don't actually know if it ever bothers them. I wonder how I can find out. She flicked her tail thoughtfully. You know, without getting my nose cut off. I think, do you ever feel bad about what Queen Wasp makes you do? Is definitely one of those questions I'm not supposed to ask.
Especially if you don't want anyone to know that the mind control doesn't work on you, he said.
Right. Cricket fiddled with the earpiece of her glasses. Katie did is the only one who knows. I'm worried Queen Wasp might be angry if she found out. So, I hide whenever it happens, and hope no one notices.
I won't tell anyone, Blue promised.
She gave him a sweet, slightly sad smile, and it occurred to him that he might never have a chance to tell anyone anyway. He felt a sharp prickle of pain under his wristband. So, what did you do? She asked. Why is the whole hive looking for you? What kind of criminal enterprise have I gotten myself involved in? She kept smiling, but Blue noticed a shiver tremble across her wings. He guessed there was a part of her that had suddenly realized she was alone with a dragon who might be dangerous. Him, of all dragons, scaring a hive wing.
Nothing, he said quickly.
He looked up at her and put one talon on the table, palm open.
I promise, I am totally harmless. The most harmless. Thoroughly, utterly, completely incapable of harm doing.
Oh, she said. She thought for a second. That is reassuring. Thoroughly, utterly, completely reassuring. Except for how it's exactly what a dangerous criminal would say.
Is it really?
He asked. Wide-eyed. Cricket laughed. I don't know. I guess I'll have to ask all my dangerous criminal friends. He liked the way her laugh made sun-colored scales ripple all down her long neck. His head was starting to feel strangely woozy.
What would the least dangerous dragon in the world say? He asked.
Why would the least dangerous dragon in the world be running away from Hivewing guards? She countered. What could he possibly have done that's so terrible? It made Queen Wasp bust out her mind control powers. The question hit Blue like an entire hive collapsing on his chest.
What did I do? I've always been a good dragon. Why is this happening to me?
Oh, no, she said, slipping off the table and crouching beside him as he folded to the floor. Why did that make you look so sad? What happened? She unfolded her wings to shelter the curve of his back.
I don't know, he said.
It was splendid having her wings over him, Like being hugged by the sun. Although actually, it would probably be terrible to be hugged by the sun. This was much cooler. What was he talking about? Oh, right. The worst day ever.
One moment, it was a normal metamorphosis day. And then suddenly, Luna was on fire, and Swordtail was attacking guards, and Io was carrying me, and I don't even... I mean, I would never disobey a hive wing. It all just happened so fast, and I was so scared.
Were the books blurrier from this angle, or were his eyes losing focus? It's your metamorphosis day? Cricket said. She tipped her head at his wing buds, but politely didn't touch them.
A polite hive wing? How did she get so weird and perfect?
Are you sure? They don't look ready yet. She picked up one of his talons and examined his wrist scales.
No, no, Blue said. It's Luna's metamorphosis day. My sister.
The one on fire, Cricket said. Is she all right? Why was she on fire? Lightning? I think I'd have noticed a lightning striking the hive today. How would fire even get into... She stopped suddenly, staring at him with her mouth open.
Did you get frozen? He said in a panic. Are you being mind-controlled right now?
Your sister's a flame silk? She whispered in her own voice. A real one? That's amazing.
It is. You know about those?
He tried to get to his feet, discovered that his knees had chosen an entirely different life goal, staggered a little sideways, and fell into her. Uh-oh, Cricket said, wrapping her wings around him. Let me see your wristband. He could barely move his arm over to where she could catch it. She tugged on his wristband, trying to slide a claw underneath it, but it was heavy and snug.
Why is my...
he tried to say, but apparently words were too hard. Really, it was just unreasonable to expect entire word sentence groups arranged in order.
Shh,
she said, helping him lie down on his back. Don't be scared, but there might be a toxin in your wristband. I read a study about the idea once, but I didn't think they'd implemented it yet. Did you feel anything? Like a needle poking you, kind of? I bet they rigged it to inject you if they ever couldn't find you.
Why? He mumbled.
He wanted to ask if it was going to kill him. He thought he should probably be worried if he was about to die. But it would be much easier to close his eyes, wouldn't it? And stop thinking about it? It would be much easier to think about how sparkly Cricket's glasses were, and how they made her face all interesting, as though there were lots of unexpected angles and layers to it, like a prism. Prism. Words were funny. They're hoping you'll flop over somewhere and be easy to catch, she said, wiggling a folded piece of paper between his wristband and his scales. Joke's on them, though, because you've got me to hide you. The paper caught on something hidden, tearing a little gash in his skin, and he yelped with startled pain. I'm sorry. Cricket cupped his face in her talons and caught his eyes with hers, like her gaze was amber and he was safe inside of it. Don't conk out. We might have to go back into the tunnels if they start searching the school.
Can't move, he slurred.
I'm going to take off your wrist cuff, she said. Is that all right? Blue, can you hear me? Blink if that's all right with you.
No way,
he managed around his numb tongue.
I'll be in so much trouble.
Oh, beautiful dragon, she said sympathetically. Don't you know how much trouble you're already in? He closed his eyes. Something wet was leaking out of them. Apparently the toxin had affected his tear ducts, too. Cricket scrambled up and disappeared from his side. He opened his eyes again, afraid that she'd be gone completely, but she was only across the library, carefully unscrewing one of the lamps from the wall, with a dust rag wrapped around her claws to protect them from the heat. Soon she had uncovered a small, glowing glass ball from inside the globe of the lamp. It shone bright enough to make Blue's eyes hurt. She folded the cloth over the ball and carried it to the librarian's desk, where she cleared away the books and papers, then set down a metal plate from a side drawer.
"Whom?"
Blue mumbled. "Don't worry, I've done this before," she said. "I mean, never anywhere quite so flammable, but I'm sure it'll be fine." She dug through the rest of the drawers until she found something that looked like a long, thin pair of tweezers. Blue had seen tools like that before. He'd even used them a few times to untangle particularly messy snarls of silk. Cricket took a deep breath, unwrapped the ball, and caught it between the tweezers, setting it down on the metal plate. She threw the rag into a far corner, still holding the ball steady, and then picked up a marble paperweight shaped like a coiled python. She moved so confidently and efficiently that it didn't occur to Blue to be afraid, until the last moment, when she looked up at the ceiling and whispered, "Please help me not set the library on fire, Clearsight." He couldn't have stopped her anyway, as she brought the pale gray snake smashing down on the light ball. Glass splintered across the desk, and a powerful burnt metal smell filled the air. But Cricket pounced forward with the tweezers and lifted something up. It looked like a filament of silk, as long as one of Blue's claws, but alight with fire from end to end. That was the source of light in all the lamps in the hive. Flame silk. How had he never known that before? He'd never even wondered how the lamps worked. He'd assumed it was a hive wing skill. If he'd had to guess, he would have imagined that perhaps some of them could create fire, like the dragons from the old stories who'd once lived across the sea. Scarcely breathing, Cricket eased across the room toward him, holding the flame silk thread in the tweezers.
Could she really set the whole library on fire with that little thing? He wondered. If so, she's taking a big risk for me.
She crouched beside him and lifted his left arm gently in her free claws. "Don't move," she said. "I mean, I know you can't, but really don't." With infinite caution, she traced the flame silk across his wrist cuff. It seared a smoking black line in the bronze, right across the W in Silkworm Hall.
"Hawker is going to kill me," Blue thought deliriously. "When I get to the checkpoint, he's going to make that very stern, frowny face and tut-tut and check his list and grumble about paperwork and then stab me with his spear thingy."
Cricket traced the line again and then again with the flame silk thread, burning it a little deeper each time. The smell of blacksmiths and melting chains filled the room, swamping the scent of old paper. And then, a few careful passes later, the metal gave way and fell off his wrist, brushing against his scales and leaving a small scorch mark that hurt like a viper bite. Blue bit back a whimper. "Oh, shoot," Cricket said. She jumped up and ran back to the librarian's desk, grabbed a small watering can, and poured water from it over his burn. Then she dropped the flame silk thread into the water that was left in the can. A sizzling, hissing sound, and a cloud of steam billowed out of the top of it. Blue's arm felt like it was floating. Like maybe it would drift right up to the roof and bump around between the books on the top shelves. He felt untethered from the earth, a feeling that was tangled up with how close he was to Cricket, and how she maybe had superpowers, or at least the absolute very best brain in the world. Cricket laughed. "I don't know about that," she said, and he realized that he must have said something out loud. "My teachers seem to think my brain is terribly annoying."
"I like it," Blue said.
Everything still felt blurry, but his mouth was working a little better. Or at least, words were coming out of it in order, even though those words didn't seem to be waiting for approval from the rest of him. He managed to sit up and smile at her.
It's my new favorite brain.
And then the world kind of tipped sideways and went dark, and Blue slipped quietly into the nothing. Chapter 8 Blue had the impression that he should wake up, that it might be a good idea, that the reason it was a good idea might have something to do with how, wherever he was sleeping, wasn't swaying in the breeze the way it was supposed to. This web hammock he'd fallen asleep in was weirdly still and hard underneath him, and there was someone shaking his shoulder, someone whose wings brushed his face sometimes. Mother? Mother never smelled like books and apples, the way this dragon did.
Are you awake? The dragon whispered. Blue, if you're not, could you be, please, now-ish?
Yumpfed,
Blue said, which was odd, because he'd been trying to say, you bet, but apparently,
yumpfed,
was good enough for the dragon with all the questions. Because she started trying to nudge him up to his feet.
Oh, questions. It's Cricket.
What are you smiling about? She said curiously. I hope that's a good sign. Do you think you could smile and stand up at the same time? I would love to let you sleep more, but I think we really need to move. She froze for a moment, with him leaning heavily against her shoulder. Now the library was coming into focus around him. The glow of the lamps, the rows and rows of books, the sound of tramping talons from the hallway outside. The what? He pointed at the door in alarm and she nodded.
That's why I woke you, she whispered. Quick, into the tunnels.
She bundled him under the table and through the trap door. His arms felt all wobbly, and his tail seemed to be entirely in the way, but he somehow managed to crawl into the dark space beyond. He dragged himself forward so Cricket could scrunch in behind him. The glow from the library lamps vanished as Cricket pulled the trapdoor shut. Blue started to retreat farther into the shadows, but she caught his nearest talon and put one claw to her mouth in warning. Blue froze, and in that instant, he heard the library door slam open. Three sets of talons thundered in, shaking the room, so that a couple of books toppled off tall shelves, and a small cloud of book dust wafted through the cracks in the trap door. He twisted his neck to peek over Cricket's shoulder. In the glimpses he could see as they moved around, the hive wing's eyes were blank white pearls. So the queen was still mind-controlling them. He wondered how long he'd been unconscious. He wondered how long she could keep it up. He wondered if she planned to keep them all as her zombies until she found him, no matter how long that took. And then his heart stopped in his chest as he remembered the wrist cuff Cricket had burned off him. He couldn't see it from his angle, but wasn't it still lying out there on the floor? Wouldn't they see it and know immediately that he'd been here? But several agonizing moments passed, and the searching dragons didn't cry out or roar for backup, or hiss in triumph. They moved mechanically, soundlessly through the room, checking every obvious hiding spot. One crouched down to look under the table, and Blue closed his eyes in fright, not daring to breathe. But the trap door must have looked like part of the wall, because the hive wing, jet black, with flecks of red along his ears, wings, and claws, only grunted and moved on. Cricket twitched suddenly, as if startled, and Blue realized he was leaning against her side, their tails entangled, their talons touching. He had been too terrified to notice, and he was afraid that pulling away would make a noise the searchers might hear. He checked her face, or what little of it he could see in the tiny bars of light. She had her gaze fixed on one of the hive wings. A yellow-orange dragon freckled all over with black spots, but he couldn't quite interpret her expression. Dismay? Regret? Anger?
What is she feeling? He wondered. Hiding from her own tribe, in the dark with a stranger, risking her queen's wrath to help a silkwing.
He wondered about the hive wings out there, too. Their sweet family evening of slides and seesaws and zebra meat snacks had abruptly turned into a dragon hunt. Everything they'd been planning to do tonight had been ripped out from under them. They didn't even know where their own dragonettes were because right now, finding Blue was all they cared about. The giggling little dragonettes had gone from playing tag to prowling the shadows of the hive with snarling teeth, every scale ready to attack. How could they all go home after this? Back to family dinners and wing aerodynamics homework, knowing that someone could take over their minds and change their whole lives at any moment. The three hive wings touched their foreheads with one talon, all at the same time, with exact mirrored movements. "Nothing in the library," they said in unison. A ripple of fury crossed each of their faces simultaneously.
"He must be here somewhere. Keep looking."
They marched out the door, but Blue could hear their talon steps in the corridor for a long time after they were out of sight. Cricket opened her mouth to say something, and this time he was the one to shush her. His antennae unfurled softly, feeling the vibrations in the air. Now that he was calmer and more awake, he could sense at least 20 other dragons searching the school. He could also feel Cricket's heart beating, very close to his, and almost as fast.
"Don't be scared,"
he tried to think to her. There was no reason not to be. If they were caught, he was sure she'd be in awful trouble. But he'd do everything he could to keep her out of it. He'd let them catch him first. He reached out carefully through the dark and took one of her talons, pressing it to his own heart.
"I'm so glad you're here with me."
She looked up at him, small cracks of light dappling her face in gold and shadow, and he felt her pulse jump to match his.
"Oh, this is the thing that's forbidden," Blue realized. "This feeling. Looking at a hive wing like this. Her looking back."
If they could be in more trouble than they already were, this was how. But maybe that wasn't what she was feeling. Maybe he was still woozy from the toxin and confused by his life being upended. Maybe he was just imagining the flutter in their twining heartbeats. His antennae twitched quietly, following the vibrations of the dragons moving away from this section of the school.
"I think they've all gone upstairs," he whispered. "Is there an upstairs?"
"Yes. How can you tell where they are?" she whispered back. "Your antennae?" He nodded. "I found some old biology books that said hive wings used to have antennae too," she said softly. "But when I asked my science teacher about it, he said not to be impertinent, and then the books disappeared from the library." She sighed. "Everything interesting is off limits. Why can't we study our own evolution? Don't you want to know what the tribes were like 2,000 years ago, when Clearsight arrived?"
"I never thought about it," he admitted.
But she was right. If hive wings were all descendants of Clearsight, what had they been like before she came to Pantala? They stayed there, quietly, in the dark, with their talons and tails entwined, for a long time as the sounds of the search tramped above them, around them, in and out, and along the halls, and every room of the enormous school. Blue felt the jarring thumps of tables being overturned, the rattling clatter of closets being emptied, all their contents clawed out and thrown on the floor. He felt tremendously sorry for whoever had to clean up all this tomorrow. He guessed Queen Wasp wouldn't helpfully brainwash them into doing that. At last all the vibrations faded, and Blue tested the air until he was sure the school was empty again.
"They're all gone," he whispered.
"That's a pretty cool superpower," she said, smiling at his antennae as they curled back in.
Not quite as cool as knowing everything about everything, he said.
She blinked. Are you talking about me? I hardly know anything. There's so much I don't know. I mean, yet. One day I will. I hope. I'm working on it. She wrinkled her snout, as though the existence of unanswered questions was one of the greatest trials of her life. Like how Queen Wasp's mind control works? I really want to know that.
Do you wish?
He hesitated, then plunged into his question.
Do you wish you were like the other Hive Wings? If you could make yourself, mind controllable, would you?
No, she said, her wings brushing his sides as they flared out and hit the walls of the tunnel. Would you? Who would? No. I'd fix it so it didn't work on anyone if I could. That's what you would do too, isn't it? At the very least, I'd fix Katie did.
Oh, he said. Was that your sister? The yellow one with the black spots you were watching?
She exhaled. Yes. She's my sister and my best friend. She normally looks much kinder than that.
It must be awful,
Blue said, studying her face.
Seeing someone you love transformed, like her brain and soul were stolen. She looks like her, but she's not. And you don't know what she might do or how she might treat you, but you know you can't reach her.
Cricket tilted her head at him. That's right, she said. That's exactly what it's like. Katydid says it's fine, and she doesn't mind, since it happens so rarely. But she can't see herself all creepy-eyed. She doesn't know what it feels like for me to have to hide from her. She shivered slightly, and Blue realized he was still holding her talon. He let go of it reluctantly.
I hope you do find a way to save her, he said. And all of them.
I know the grunting one who checked under the table, too, Cricket said quickly, as though she was trying to change the subject so she wouldn't cry. His name's Bombardier, but he's awful, so there's not much difference between regular him and brain-dead him. He thinks I'm in love with him, if you've ever wondered what the most enormous arrogance looks like. I guess I'd still save him, but maybe, like, last.
Why didn't they see my wrist cuff? Blue asked. Or the broken glass and the flame silk thread in the watering can?
I cleaned it all up, of course, she said. You didn't notice? In between your snores?
I wasn't. Did I? I didn't. Did I?
Cricket laughed. No, you're a very polite sleeper. Don't worry. She glanced out at the library again. The only thing I couldn't do was replace the missing light globe. But those burn out or get stolen all the time, so hopefully no one will connect it to you.
So every light globe in the hive has a bit of flame silk inside it?
He said tentatively. Of course, she said. Every light globe in every hive. It would be tough to live the way we do without flame silk. We'd all be bumping around in the dark, treading on everyone's claws. Plus, we need it for everything else that's made with fire. Metalwork? Glass? She touched her spectacles self-consciously.
Do all the hive wings know about flame silks? He asked. Because I'd never heard of them until today.
I think they know the queen has a source of flame silk, she said thoughtfully. But most of them probably don't think about where it comes from very much. It's just something you order when you need it. Blue opened and closed his mouth on his next question. He remembered the eerie golden lava erupting from Luna's wrists and weaving around her scales. Her silk was a commodity to the Hive Wings. Something to be ordered and bought and sold and used. If your sister's a flame silk, Cricket said, reaching for his wrist. Does that mean you're going to be a flame silk too? She traced one claw over the spot where his silk would come out, and he shivered.
I don't know, he said. Ayu said I would be, but we weren't taught anything about flame silks at Silkworm Hall.
But that must be why they're chasing you, right? She said. Queen Wasp would never let a flame silk wander around her hives unguarded.
I've never been guarded before, he said. I've never done anything wrong. I'm really good at following the rules. She doesn't have to worry about me.
He frowned, touching the spot on his forehead that was starting to hurt.
Maybe she just doesn't know that. Maybe I could go to her and explain that I'm a loyal Silkwing. Maybe if I promise I'll be careful, she'll let me go back to my normal life. And Luna, too. Luna isn't dangerous.
Cricket hesitated. I think Hivewing policy is that all free flame silks are dangerous, no matter what they say. She unlatched the trap door and crawled back into the library. Blue followed her as she pulled a book off one of the high shelves, fluttering her wings a little to lift herself up to where she could reach it. She flipped through the pages, then flitted under his nose. Scarlet colors leaped off the page, assaulting his eyeballs. The picture was of a hive on fire, burning from top to bottom, with screaming hive-wing faces dimly visible through the smoke. At the top, huge dark letters proclaimed, "The consequences of unchained flame silks."
"Yikes," he said.
"I guess that's supposed to be you," she said, pointing to a silkwing, standing in the middle of the burning hive, with fire pouring out of his wrists. The illustrated dragon had a gleeful, unhinged grin on his face as he torched the city. Blue shuddered.
"I would never," he said. "Why would anyone ever? That's just horrible."
Cricket tugged the book back over to her and turned to the next page, studying the words. Her eyes darted so quickly across the text that Blue couldn't believe she was actually absorbing any of it until she said, "Okay, here. Flame silk genetics. A dragonette with one flame silk parent has a 50% chance of being a flame silk too. So we know Luna is, but you might, or might not be." She looked over the top of her glasses at him. "Do you think you are? Do your wrists ever feel like they're burning? What symptoms did Luna have?"
"She didn't have any," Blue said. "I mean, not until today, when her silk started coming in all, 'Arrgh, now there's lava everywhere.' But she's been totally normal before now."
"So there's no way to know if you are or not until your metamorphosis day," Cricket said. They must want to keep you locked up until then anyway, in case you try to run away."
"My friend Io's the one who made me run away. It wouldn't have occurred to me to run," Blue pointed out. "At least, not until they started chasing me."
"What's the chrysalis?" Cricket asked.
"The what?"
"When we first met, in the shed, you asked if I was with the chrysalis." Blue felt a twist of guilt in his chest. He was pretty sure that whatever the chrysalis was, hivewings weren't supposed to know about it. Even smart, sympathetic hivewings with interesting glasses. Io would be furious if she found out he'd blurted it out to the first dragon he met. Cricket was studying him curiously. "Is it a secret?" she said. "A silkwing secret? Do you guys have lots of secrets from us? Can you tell me some of them? I promise not to tell anyone. There's so much I don't know about silkwings, but Father won't let me ask the servants anything."
"I don't really know what it is," he admitted,
trying to stem the tide of questions.
"My friend just told me they'd help me if I could find them. But I have no idea how to do that."
He slid the flame silk book over and studied it himself, hoping he hadn't hurt Cricket's feelings.
"So, if flame silk is so useful, then Queen Wasp probably isn't killing them, right?"
"Of course she isn't," Cricket said, startled. "We're not barbarians.
barbarians, Blue. The queen's a little scary, but she's not a murderer. Blue would have said the same thing himself this morning. But something about watching those guards surround Luna and then hiding from white-eyed, mind-controlled dragons was making him a little less certain about the queen's trustworthiness.
"Do you think I should turn myself in?"
he asked hesitantly. That sounded like the right thing to do, except that it felt very, very wrong. Io's warning that he couldn't trust any hive wings rang in his ears.
"And here I am, of course, doing exactly that."
Cricket thought for a moment, tapping her claws on the book. "No," she said finally, slowly. "They won't kill you. But if you are a flame silk, they'll... well, you'll end up with the other flame silks, I guess."
"Where is that?"
he said, with a sudden rush of hope.
"That's where Luna will be."
"Oh, I'm sorry I made you look so excited," Cricket said anxiously. "Nobody knows where the flame silks are kept."
"Are you sure?" Blue asked. "Someone must know."
"You're right," she said, leaping to her feet. "Let's think. Flame silk orders go out all the time, because each thread only burns for about one cycle of the smallest moon before it fades, which means someone has to get the flame silk from the dragons producing it to fill the orders. So whose job is it? And someone must keep them fed and taken care of."
"And guarded,"
Blue put in. She flinched. "Yes, probably that too." She started pacing up and down between the library tables. "And of course Queen Wasp knows. So there must be a way to trace the flame silk back to wherever the dragons are. This is definitely a solvable mystery." Cricket hurried over to the librarian's desk and opened one of the bottom drawers. "All right, forms, where are you?" She's always complaining about how many there are to fill out. Order forms? Replacing library supplies. You would think a librarian would be all about alphabetizing her folders, wouldn't you? Do you think she noticed that I alphabetized them for her? Oh, light globes. Here. She pulled out a sheaf of papers and narrowed her eyes at them. Blue glanced at one of the lamps. It was weird to think that there was a tiny thread of silk in there, glowing and burning. It was even weirder to think that the thread had come from a dragon very much like him, or Luna. A dragon trapped somewhere, spilling flame from her arms for hive wings to gather and snip into little useful bits that could be packaged and sold across the continent. A dragon whose whole life would be about producing flame silk for hive wings, and nothing else.
"Maybe it came from my father."
The thought dazed him for a moment. His father was a flame silk, kept under guard wherever other flame silks were kept. That's why Blue had never met him. He'd only been brought out for a moment to father more dragons, in the hopes of creating more flame silks, Blue guessed. Which meant Queen Wasp knew exactly what Luna and Blue might become. She'd created them on purpose, for that purpose. "Hmm," Cricket said. "It looks like the order forms get sent to a department in Wasp Hive. So maybe the flame silks are there, or maybe that department forwards it on."
"If we can figure out where they are," Blue said, "maybe I could go see what it's like. Maybe it's not so terrible. Maybe that would help me decide whether I should turn myself in."
Cricket tipped her head up at him. "And if it is terrible?" she asked. "Would you want to rescue your sister?"
Yes, he admitted.
Of course that was what he was really thinking, and of course Cricket had figured that out.
"But I'm not exactly the right dragon for that job."
"Why not?"
"Well, I mean,"
he waved vaguely at himself,
"I'm not very, I don't like making trouble." Troublemakers, I need Swordtail, he blurted. He's the one who should rescue her.
All right, Cricket said, whisking the forms back into the drawer. She smiled brightly at Blue. Then let's go get him. Chapter 9.
It's not that simple, Blue argued, following Cricket into the dim hallway beyond the library. Swordtail attacked a bunch of Hivewing guards. He's either on Misbehavior's way, or somewhere worse by now. And I can't exactly stroll around the Hive with everyone looking for me.
I bet I can solve that problem, Cricket said. Let's think. Both problems, maybe? Will you let me try?
Sure,
Blue said, distracted by the school around him. Rows of cubbyholes lined the corridor, many of them overflowing with crumpled papers, books, sticky bags of half-eaten nectar snacks, seed packets, and little buckets of dirt. Every few steps there was a glass terrarium embedded in the wall, with something growing in it. Tidy clusters of blue forget-me-nots in one, long white carrots in another, prickly cactus balls bristling in an orderly row from a third.
Whoa, Blue said. It's so planty in here.
We're an agriculture track school. Do silkwings have those? Cricket said. They passed one glass case that was full of water, crowded with dark flaps of purple seaweed. Blue squinted at it and realized that it was lit by a small light globe on the roof of the terrarium. They all were. Tiny flame silk suns kept these plants alive.
Maybe, Blue said. But I think they usually figure out which job to assign us after we finish school. Our lessons are things like the history of the Leafwing War, silk weaving, reading, web structure, and following directions. Lots of following directions.
I wish I could go to your school for a day, Cricket said, her wings twitching, as though she might fly out one of the skylights at any moment. I'd love to hear what other dragons are learning, wouldn't you? Are your teachers interesting? How big is your library? Do you have music classes? I wish we did. I don't understand music at all, and I really want to. But our curriculum is very focused so we can all become farmers and gardeners. That's what this is all about. She waved her claws at the corridor walls. Every student is assigned a terrarium for practice.
Oh, Blue said. You don't seem like a farmer to me.
I'd be an awesome farmer. If I wanted to be, she said, which I don't. I want to be a librarian, or a scientist, or an inventor. But I'm a terrible farming student. Apparently there's only one way to do things, and that's how it's always been done, and there's no point in trying to innovate, Cricket. It's a waste of seeds. And oh dear, why can't you just grow potatoes like a useful dragon?
She paused at one of the terrariums and tapped it lightly with her claw.
This is mine. Blue was pretty sure he could have guessed that on his own. Unlike the other orderly terrariums, this box was a riot of leaves and color, as though a host of sunflowers had thrown a gala and some marauding butterflies had crashed it. Velvety orange petals jostled for space with elegant trailing spider plants. Sapphire blue bulbs peeked out from behind heart-shaped leaves with pink edges.
It's like your brain, as a garden, Blue said wonderingly.
Cricket laughed. And equally popular with my teachers, she said. Cricket, what a disaster. Why didn't you use one type of seed like all the other students? Why must everything you touch be such a mess?
Blue stepped closer and peered through the tangle of foliage. Deep in the heart of her terrarium, well hidden by the other plants, there was a tiny tree. It was no taller than the length of two claws, but it had a trunk and miniature branches and little perfect tufts of forest green needles all over it. It was beautiful.
That, he breathed, that's a real... How did you...
I found the seed on one of our gathering field trips. I had no idea what it was until it started to grow. She smiled at it wistfully. I had a feeling you'd see it. Most dragons don't. They think my terrarium is too messy to look at for very long. It offends their eyes or something. But my botany teacher finally spotted it last week. He wants me to uproot it and throw it away. She sighed. Poor little innocent tree. She turned and kept walking, and Blue followed her, although he wished he could stay and stare at the tree a bit longer. He couldn't believe it was real. Surely Cricket loved it. It looked like a loved little tree.
That's so sad, he said. What an awful thing to ask you to do. You brought it to life.
I'm not going to let my tree die, she said firmly. But where can I hide it? Somewhere with light, where I can visit, but no one will find it. I'll figure something out.
She pushed open a door at the end of the hall, revealing a room with long desks covered in glass beakers and small pots of soil. A metal cabinet at the back of the room was lit by a tiny globe inside, and the shelves were lined with neatly labeled bottles of liquid, organized by color. The top shelf ranged from a bright ruby red to a pale pink. The two middle shelves were shades of lemon and emerald and lime, and the bottom shelf held a few milky white bottles and several with nearly colorless liquids in them. Blue crouched to look at one of them and realized it was slightly aquamarine when the light hit it in a certain way. He didn't understand any of the labels printed on the bottles. There were letters and numbers and some obscure squiggle symbols in between, but none of them formed recognizable words.
This is our chemistry lab, Cricket said. We use some of these to help plants grow. Others will kill certain weeds, if you apply them the right way. But a lot of these have other, non-botanical uses, too. How many do you think I can take without Professor Earthworm noticing?
Take? Blue said, startled. You can't steal from your school.
She paused with a vial the color of chamomile tea in her claws. But... Blue, these will help us. Don't you want to get your friend?
Yes, but... But stealing is wrong, he stammered.
He imagined the chemistry teacher coming in tomorrow morning and finding bottles missing. Wouldn't she be upset? Wouldn't she feel guilty and worried about who had taken them and what might be done with them? She might blame her students. Someone might get in trouble unfairly.
You really are good at following the rules, aren't you? Cricket said, intrigued. Like, you really believe in them.
Don't you? He said. Doesn't everyone?
She thought about that for a moment. He liked the way she stopped and thought carefully about the things he said. Most dragons already had their ideas settled in their heads. If they paused to think before responding, it was only about how to explain to you that you were wrong. But Cricket seemed to take in information and questions and hold them up against the things she thought she knew to see if there was anything new she'd missed.
Weird, she said finally. I usually think of rules as things that get in the way of all the stuff I really want to know. I mean, how can "don't ask questions" ever be a good rule? Or only borrow one book at a time from the library. That's just ludicrous. No one ever explains rules like that in a sensible way. But don't hurt other dragons? That's a rule I think everyone believes in, right? So, I guess I believe in some rules, and I think rules in general can be useful. But I also think it's all right to stop and question some of the rules sometimes, if they feel wrong to you. Doesn't that make sense?
But don't steal is a rule everyone agrees on too, isn't it?
He asked. I think that help dragons who need help might be more important than don't steal, Cricket said. I mean, turn over fugitives to Queen Wasp when she is looking for them is probably a rule too, you know? But I don't think you're dangerous. And I want to know more about flame silks and silk wings, and I think I can help you.
I'd like to help you. Blue looked back at the citrus-colored vials,